aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rocon Show with Anna DeBlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence.
I'm very concerned, Ro.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there are a lot of things going on in the world that are concerning, and we will get to them on this program this afternoon. But did you hear about the birds? The birds are going away. The Illinois losing 1.4 million birds per year, according to the Cornell study's finding in the Illinois Audubon Society.
But are they like the pigeons or like pretty cardinals?
No, no, no. There are like the
native
species that we're used to seeing, like sparrows and the red-winged blackbird.
Oh, those are cool.
Yeah, right. It's very concerning to say that.
Take the pigeons, not the black-winged. Wait, what'd you say?
Blackbirds. The blackbirds. Red wing blackbird.
Need a shorter name for that.
Cited for that, but
no pretty red wings either. I want to say that cardinals are red wings.
Okay, specifically birds.
3 billion fewer birds than we had in 1970 in North America, and Illinois not doing well, losing 1.5 million a year.
We don't think this is like a bad census take. Maybe they didn't cooperate this time around.
They didn't have enough
social media. They're millennials. They're not so interested in taking part.
No, they're just saying not one cause, but multiple interacting causes. Is that they're saying, and that human interference, as you might expect, is the root of the problems here with what's going on. So the environment and, you know, human interference.
Man, we ruin everything.
Well, I think, don't you think that at the end of the day, if, you know, like, I think human babies are, if I have to give up 100 birds for a human baby, I'm okay with that.
Well, how's the human baby the trade-off?
Well, because it's human expansion, right?
Yeah, it's you
but
know,
also pollution.
Chemicals, pollution in our water, pollution in our air.
Deforestation. Not that we have much of that around
here. Yeah, mowing through trees and building communities and things like that. We've got, they don't cite any one particular reason that is the most, you know, the most compelling, but they're saying that there are a number of reasons, and a lot of it's us. It's
we're
on us.
Them
this
with
is
our
on
cars.
Us.
Well, yeah.
And our
that.
Buildings, mm-hmm. right? They put some of that reflective glass in.
They smack into buildings. That is a problem.
A big issue. Mm-hmm. That really is. You see that a lot.
But even a little bit, I live in a townhouse that's, I don't know, 4 stories, whatever it is. I haven't been through all of it yet. And and every once in a while, I'll hear like a thud. And it's a bird that, you know, and all of a sudden I go outside and I find a bird lying there. And then and that's the worst if they're still like shallow breathing.
Oh, there is a number. Steve Cochran had the woman on who here's a number you can call. They have people on call every single hour of the day across Chicago. And I'm thinking the suburbs as well, that they will help if there is a bird that's in that situation.
Yeah. Because I don't want to be there. I can't.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you don't know what to do, right? It's just you don't want to pick it up. You're not sure what to do. But there are ways to help them. But oh my gosh!
I think also cats are killing all the birds too. It's just another reason that the cat creeps me out. You send a cat out. There's some statistic. You send a cat out for like 20 minutes. It kills 30 things in 20 minutes.
Oh man! And they usually don't come back for a month. So imagine what kind of murder spree that is.
Where's that cat been? Where's the cat at? Like, you just, you know.
Whiskers.
And they never tell you. They never act guilty or anything.
Yeah,
they
just sort of sit back down on the couch. I'll decide when I'm coming back. Don't worry about where I've been or what I did.
Sprawl out and start, you know, preening themselves.
There's a statistic that cats kill 3.7 billion birds a year in the United States.
And they don't eat them, right? Is that right? Or do they eat them?
I don't think they eat them. I've never had a cat.
They're like the Trump kids. They just kill them just to kill them.
This is for sport.
Exactly.
I don't know why I keep thinking cats sound like that when they talk.
Well, that's the thing. You call the cat, and the cat's not going to, the cat doesn't show up anyway.
No, not interested.
You have to shake the food bag.
Right. Yeah, maybe. But then sometimes, and then you're like, you're looking down the hallway thinking they're going to come up there, and they're actually on top of the cabinets looking back down at you.
I had cats briefly. They knew how to open the cabinets, and there were no handles. I don't know how they did it, and I'd hear them like rummaging through my pots and pans. It's like, great, I have to clean these again.
I don't see you as a cat person.
I don't either.
I'm an animal person, but these were cats that were very much like dogs, super friendly.
And that's what everybody says who has a cat that is, oh, it's just like a dog. Well, then get a dog. You know what? Here's a dog.
Yeah, but cats can be left alone all day. It's convenient.
Yeah, but they get even with you eventually. I had a cat try to murder me. That's. And that,
I could see you not getting along with
cats. No, I did not get along with this particular cat. No, he ran the whole house.
Well, right? You want to know why, Ro? Because cats can sense tension, And you're tense all the time. So they're like, get away from me, man.
That energy, right? They know,
yeah, exactly.
They know what's going on.
I am not tense all the time.
Well, you should be tense about this bird problem. So that's all. I'm just putting that out there. We got to
I don't know.
Keep track of that.
I see plenty of birds down here.
You do?
Yeah.
I really don't. You downtown area, you see plenty of birds. I mean,
yes.
Pigeons, as Lauren pointed out.
Yes,
you do
tons
see
of pigeons.
Lots of pigeons.
Seagulls.
There's near my on the townhouses that I live in. There's like a bird bus stop. They're like lined up on the top.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
by the
right.
dozens.
I know which one you're talking about. There.
Do they also experience delays?
Yes, they do.
But isn't there a Dunkin' Donuts there? And do people leave some of that stuff out there for them? Because it feels like you've got a lot right there. A lot. It's just a very strange amount of birds that are that particular.
Yeah, I got a lot of birds, and I got downtown. It's like a Hitchcock movie, and then at downtown at Staten Lake, where I gotta be.
Uh-huh.
There's like it is you at the you go underneath the train station at Staten Lake, and it is like a guano factory. It is like oh my god! It's the birds have restriped the traffic pattern at Staten Lake. Cars are running into each other. It's bad. Ben Bradley knows what I'm talking about, and he'll share his thoughts on this coming up in just a moment. But first, Kim, what's coming up in the news at the bottom of the hour?
Roe, we're following the case in Lake County of five teens charged with murder. Now those charges have been dropped. We'll explain coming up.
This week, Chicago's Best is dedicated to making your early mornings easier. Pour yourself a cup of coffee and get ready for Chicago's Best Breakfast, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
Ha!
Ha! Ha!
Ha! All right, Rob Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis on 720 WGN and WGN Everywhere. Ben Bradley is at WGN TV Newsroom, where he's about to hold forth on the 4 p.m. news on WGN TV.
Hello, guys. Good to be with you
Hi,
on this
Ben.
Thursday.
Thank you, Benjamin. Very, very busy back there.
Very busy newsroom today. Lots of stories popping as we speak. Mm-hmm. I think one of the more interesting ones comes from the northern suburbs. You remember a couple of weeks ago, the Lake County prosecutor, Michael Nierheim, charged five teenagers with murder after they were allegedly involved in an attempted robbery of some sort in the northern suburbs, in which a homeowner came out, says one of the kids came at him with an object, and the homeowner shot and killed a 14-year-old that was part of the group. Well, prosecutors in Lake County charged the remaining members of that group with murder. This would be under that same theory of law that, you know, if you rob a bank and I'm driving the getaway car, even if I never set foot in that bank and say somebody got shot and killed in that bank, even though I never set foot in that bank as the getaway driver, somebody who's part of that crime, I can be charged
right.
with murder.
Right.
So Lake
right.
County prosecutors took a lot of heat for filing those charges, those murder charges. And today,
even though that is the law,
it is the law. Today, the prosecutor up there said, well, after reviewing more evidence and considering the wishes of that 14-year-old boy's family, they've decided to essentially enter into a deal where the remaining people will get charged with burglary, a lesser charge.
Hmm.
Interesting, though, Nierheim is facing a Democratic opponent up there in the race for state's attorney, and the Democratic opponent said, this is an example of the Lake County State's Attorney essentially charging first and investigating later.
Were they trying to get them to talk or cooperate? Was there something going on there where they were hoping there would be some more information flowing?
That's a good point. That's certainly a tactic used often by prosecutors, right? You know, throw the maximum charges against somebody with a hope of getting them to cooperate or plead out to a lesser charge. And that is what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly a possibility. And those defendants are going to enter a plea.
Right.
So
they're going to do jail time.
Yeah.
It appears.
Just you know, look, this was a tragedy all the way around. You
yeah.
have a 14-year-old boy who's dead, you know, allegedly part of a group that was trying to break into a house or steal a car or commit some sort of crime up in Lake County. And this homeowner comes out, feels threatened, and shoots and kills that 14-year-old. That homeowner, I'm sure, dealing with, mm-hmm. you know, the pain and agony of having to take another life. So no winners in this one, but it is interesting for such a high-profile case where prosecutors came out, held a press conference, you know, and talked about why they were throwing the book at these teenagers to now basically back down and agree to a plea. Maybe that was the plan all along, but you know, we certainly saw it play out here. So our Megan Dwyer's up in Lake County. She's covering that. And then we had a press conference from authorities in Will County. I'm sure you've been following this story where the fetal remains were found at a former property belonging to an Indiana abortion doctor who himself, you know, had faced charges and is now dead. And then at his former property near Crete, they find 2,000 fetal remains. Will County authorities were getting involved in that investigation, and we just got an update from them a little bit ago. So Pat Elwood is going to have that story coming up on the news at 4 o'clock today.
No, this is a feel-good newscast of the year,
all the way around, all the way around. Wow. We also covered Houston. Have you seen the torrential downpour down there? They say it's worse than a hurricane. Houston underwater right now.
Obviously a place that's been hit a lot lately, so...
All right.
Yeah, glad I could always come in and cheer you all up.
I got, you know what? You have done something that is rarely done. You have stunned me into silence. I don't even know what to say to any of
you. You're absolutely right. I apologize, Ro. Normally you do such an effective job at bringing all of us down.
Over nothing? Over nothing?
I know it's strange for us to be in different
roles. I'm going
to
ask you a question. Are you and Lauren on the same text exchange or something? Because she just said the same thing about me a few minutes ago.
Oh, Ben, well, don't tell him the truth.
Wow.
Lauren, I got your text.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is crazy stuff.
It is. And we were worried about birds earlier. Now we got more to worry about.
It's not that you're a downer, Ro. It's just that you're
I'm an alarmist.
Overly realistic.
Yeah. I'm an alarmist because I've seen too much.
I was going to say, when you've been in this city long enough, you know every game, you know how it's played and where it ends.
Yeah.
You see where it's going.
I will say that, you know, we're living in a very interesting moment here in terms of criminal justice. Mm-hmm. Because there is this... When you see Kanye and Common and Cory Booker and Donald Trump and Jared and Ivanka all on the same page, you know, there is a change here. And the whole idea of, listen, we're just going to be we've got to be as tough as it can possibly be on criminal behavior, and that will scare people into stopping. And you actually see people on both sides, liberals and conservatives, deciding that they want to do something totally different here. And it is... Yeah, I mean, some of these cases, like, you know, nonviolent offenders and marijuana busts. I mean, now that marijuana, you know, you're going to start selling marijuana, not on Michigan Avenue, but somewhere downtown eventually.
Right.
Right. I mean,
Rose, by the way, got a lot of storefronts on Michigan Avenue he needs to unload right
now. I know. So I'm thinking.
Rose Reefer Shop will not be opening.
No, I'm upset
that's
about
catchy.
That.
That's
I had a whole
catchy.
Plan. I do have a real estate guy, a buddy of mine, who does a lot of stuff on Michigan Avenue, and it was like they were waiting on that. They were like, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
But,
for the record, not the worst investment you've ever been a part of, Ro.
I'm not invested in it, by the way, Ben. I would like to point that out. I wish I were. But
he wouldn't get into that.
Yeah.
Because it's too profitable.
I have ethics. There's a wall. You and Mike Madigan both have the wall.
No, I think marijuana is the play. But the problem with marijuana investing is that you don't know who you're dealing with yet. The big banks haven't gotten involved. Well, banks can't get involved.
They can't get involved. Yeah, federal rules.
But boy, it's so highly regulated. I was talking with a guy who's in that industry yesterday, and you want to know how heavily regulated just in the state of Illinois it is. We can't even have a camera go in to shoot a medical dispensary or growing operation without getting specific permission from the state of Illinois. Yeah.
That's true.
State of Illinois has to give you permission?
Yep. That's how highly Absolutely regulated true. Of a business it is. Yeah. And for people, we can talk more about this because I think it's a fascinating topic, but we're not going to be Denver here. This is a lot more highly regulated. Out in Colorado, they've got more weed shops than they do Starbucks and McDonald's, and that's not an exaggeration. That's an actual fact, and that's not going to be the case here.
Right. So the point I was trying to make is that we've changed the way we look at this, and that original law on the books in Illinois that says if you're involved in a forcible felony in which there is a death, you can be charged with murder, which is what that case was.
I've covered a case where there was a group of people, the guys who threw one punch in a beating death were charged with murder, just because that's the way the law is written. They're able to go after you for that.
Right. So this is do we need to rethink that law? But again, we're in a different moment where it's, to have mercy on the criminal. I'm not quite sure how I feel about all of this. I don't know. I wake up every morning. I look at my phone and I go, oh my God, There's a story every day.
We should have wrapped this segment a minute ago when he was flying high.
See? He was speechless. You got him there, Ben, for the first time in history.
Anyway, we'll see you on TV at 4 o'clock, right?
Thanks, Ben. Really helpful. Yeah. That was really great.
Thanks, right. Ben.
Yep. I know that Michael Steele will keep me calm on the other side.
Oh, boy.
He'll be joining us.
I wouldn't count on it.
Right now, Kim Gordon's got the news brought to you by Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic.
Hi, Michael.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy Thursday.
That's good. That's good. Happy Thursday to you. Mm-hmm. You sound great.
Thank you. It's been a rough 40 minutes of our show so far, but you're going to calm everything down for us. It's on you.
All right. I guess I will ask a question. You used to run the Republican Party. I just want to know what the hell's going on. What do you make of this whistleblower story? Because it's really interesting. I've heard even people on the left uncomfortable with the way the story was being reported yesterday, but now there's a little bit more clarity in it that there is that it wasn't just one conversation that upset this whistleblower why he went to the IG for national security, essentially the inspector
right.
general that runs that silo of executive branch, and it's. And there will be more of a hearing on it next week. First of all, you know what I would like? I'd like Congress to work more than 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
Let's
first
start
thing.
There.
That's the first thing I would like because they're constantly. Well, we'll get to it next week or the week after because we only have like a 3 hour meetings that we have that every week. It's
right,
crazy.
Right,
but
right.
but having said that, what do you make of it?
Yeah, the story has on Earth One, mm-hmm. this is a real problem, and it matters a lot, and it tells you that this individual was put into a position that was so problematic for them that they had to raise this red flag, and they had to go through the regular channels and processes to get this in front of the right people, and the right people are going to do what they need to do, and this will get fully disclosed and exposed to the public, and it's a real problem for the current administration. On Earth 2, no one really cares, because we watched Corey Lewandowski go to the House and basically there's a little thing that you do when you go someplace and you want to mark your territory.
Yeah.
he marked that committee room.
Yeah.
And the Democrats sat there flummoxed and completely outdone by what he did. So this story, in the context of what we saw there with the encouragement of the president, individuals who never set foot in the White House, never had a day of employment inside the White House, claiming presidential executive privilege. And the Congress says, okay, I guess we can't do anything about that. In that world, this story goes nowhere. So do we want to be on Earth 1 or Earth 2 with respect to the ramifications of this whistleblower's knowledge, information, and activities. If we're on Earth 1, yeah, this is a real problem. If we're on Earth 2, we'll be, catching a train to somewhere else in about 20 minutes.
Michael Steele, do we know the nature of what this is that was communicated and what foreign leader we're talking about or what activity transpired? Do we have any more details about that?
I don't think we do. And that's what I think, the Congress wants to get their head around. The administration has clearly put up significant and will put up more roadblocks on that. And so, yeah, we don't know. And everybody's right now scrambling, trying to figure out what foreign leader is involved here, who, et cetera, and what it all means. But we're all, I mean, a lot of people are guessing. A lot of people are trying to, you know, connect dots that they don't know if they really connect to anything to figure out what the narrative really is here. But it is a problem, and it's just a matter now of waiting to see whether or not the Congress can pull back the iron veil that's been placed around this by the administration.
Yeah. Okay. I'm flummoxed by this in this respect, that if you stop and you think about the behavior of an executive branch and the hostility it has toward its co-equal branch of government in terms of the legislature. Now, the Senate obviously, you know, sits chilly on this because of Mitch McConnell and because of, you know, it's still held by Republicans. But, you know, there've got to be some senators. You know, that's you know, generally the,
well,
you know, the
mean,
big
but,
leagues.
But, what do they do? What do they
but,
do?
But, well, the, wait, wait, wait. But let me.
The director of D&I is the one who's blocking all of this.
The acting director.
What are they going to do? The right. acting. I'm sorry. Yes, the yeah. acting director.
Yeah.
Right.
Because
yeah.
The former director, who was director, Dan Coats, who was director during this moment of that, you know, in question here, right? Because Dan Coats just stepped aside, what, like 6 weeks ago. So it would have been somewhere
right.
in this, you know, this period of time of transition. That you know, he's a long-standing, highly respected Washington senator. He's an Indiana guy, as a matter of fact. I think there's no two ways around this, that Mike Pence owes his political career to Dan Coats, and that there is a certain amount of respect that you know, that Senator Coats and, you know, Director Coats has on Capitol Hill. And it's, and you know, is it incumbent, if there is something really real here, not just one particular, which is, it's being portrayed as one overly sensitive security intelligence person who was
okay,
offended.
All right, so stop right there. This is critical. What you just described, what you just said, is critical to understand what Trump and his ilk are doing. Flashback to the Mueller investigation. We spent how long being told, nothing here, keep moving, nothing, no collusion, no corruption, no. The Attorney General come out and tell us, when that report comes out, folks, that's just not even worth the butter on the popcorn. Just keep on moving, right? So when it hits, and you read through this thing, you go, holy crap, you know, what's going on here? The general response is like, I guess that's significant. Mm-hmm. So now you have a similar situation. You've got the president out here tweeting like, I talk to foreign leaders all the time. This is no big deal. This is fake news. You got the acting DNI out here saying, you guys are drawing up all this. And, of course, it's being painted as an oversensitive right. government employee.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the story hits and we know the promise and we know who was made the promise, we're like, I guess it's not a big deal. When in fact it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Steele, we got to get you to weigh in on this Justin Trudeau. Did you see the apology this afternoon? Asked for forgiveness.
I
lived a life of privilege. I've got a major blind spot. A major blind spot. He's got three incidents confirmed wearing blackface. One of them is a video. Another, he won't even confirm that those are the only incidents either. What are you making of all this?
Well, okay. If we were talking about 1985 when he was, 15 or whatever, okay, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
2001. Folks, this was like 15, 16, 17 years ago.
He was 29 right. in one of these incidents.
You were dressing up in blackface as the son of the prime minister of your country.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. I have a question.
Century.
Wearing an afro, singing Deo. I mean, the whole thing.
Oh God!
With the wig.
I don't understand.
How is this possible?
Let me just go the other way here. I don't get. I've never understood this. I don't get what's the comedy in blackface. I don't get it. Never understood it. And it's like there are so many people who apparently were doing this. It's like the frat bro thing. I'm like, what are they doing? And, now we got a Canadian doing it, right? I mean, it's like, why are the Canadians doing it?
And what we've been told, they're the enlightened one. So
yeah, I mean,
we want to mimic their healthcare system. We want to mimic their form of government. We want, so here we are. You know, so look, it just tell you that, you know, white folks still got stuff they got to work out.
Yeah, I mean, here's a guy
who's... They got a bugaboo somewhere about people of color that they feel they got to dress up and paint their skin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad enough that they fight over the kind of tan that they get, but damn, I mean, this is crazy.
I guess there's no... Right, if you don't laugh, you cry, right? I mean, it's like, well, I just want to know, what's the event, right, that he did this in?
Right.
Like, is he going? Like, when he's getting ready that night, and he's like, all right, honey, does this look right?
And he's 29, and he's in front of the mirror, and he's putting it all on. Right.
We're going to go, ooh, do I look okay in this? Or should I go darker? Are my lips white enough?
No, you really couldn't go darker. I mean,
no, you couldn't go darker. And Anna, you make the best point. He's 29 years old.
Right.
All right? It's not like, I mean, it's not even like the governor of Virginia who was at least in med school and was in like 26 or 25.
Oh, gee.
He was almost 30.
Right.
And doing this.
Oh, God.
16 years ago. So, and can't remember. I mean, what does that tell you when someone says, so how many times have you dressed up in blackface? We've already disclosed, you know.
Three of them.
He was like, I don't know.
I can't confirm. Those are the only ones.
You know, if I'm Justin
Trudeau. You can't confirm.
I'll tell you right now. If I'm Justin Trudeau, I throw a dress on tonight and go out in it. And I go, listen, I got a problem. I like to dress in other things. It's a whole thing. I need to be understood. Yeah. It's like.
Protected class kind
of thing. Yeah, look at me. I'm actually a transvestite. That's what I am.
A privileged one, but with a major blind.
Okay, and I got to just tell you something. I mean, the other thing that is kind of like an overused concept here is this idea of privilege that we're spending a lot of time now again prying ourselves away from each other by even the self-hatred of the notion of, well, I was privileged. I shouldn't be able to have any sort of thought on this.
Because this is what privileged people do.
Right.
Well, that was his apology. That was the substance of his apology. I come from a place of privilege.
Well,
I have to recognize that I let a lot of people down. And he talks about forgiveness.
If I was a poor white Canadian, I probably wouldn't behave this way.
I don't know. I'm telling you, man, put on a dress. Put on a dress. Do the next press conference dressed up as RuPaul, not in blackface.
Yeah, I don't
know. But here's the rub. Look, okay, I get it. You want to impersonate Michael Jackson at a Halloween party. You want to dress up like an Arab sheik or some African.
Don't put the makeup on.
Don't put the makeup on.
Don't put the makeup on. Without doing it. Yeah.
We get it with the costume because you know what? You normally don't dress like that.
Right.
Number one.
Let's hope not.
And number two, we recognize the people who normally do. So
okay.
When you put that on, we figure them out.
It's okay. We get it.
All good. All right. All right. Thank you so much, Michael Steele. Appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, guys.
Okay. Yeah, I'm feeling good now.
Bye, Michael.
Yeah. Bye.
Everybody's acting foolish, and that's the problem. I mean, it's like I woke up and some other... He's right. It's a different planet.
It is.
I'll wake up from this dream at some point. All right. Let us check in now. Kim Gordon's got the WGN News. What's coming up?
Roe, the University of Chicago Medical Center preparing for a nurse's strike tomorrow. We'll have the latest coming up.
All right. We have got the news with Kim Gordon coming up. And then, the Chicago madam who was arrested. Wait to hear this story. On the near Northwest Side.
Right.
What was going on?
Sleepy little neighborhood there.
Yep. She had a dungeon.
Five stories.
Five-story dungeon. We'll give you all the details coming up right after the news in 2. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
I think of different things when I think of that song. I'm not sure that's really in the spirit of what was going on here.
Well, you mean of intimacy and lovemaking?
Yes, right. Romanticism rather than paying for dungeons and being tied up. Things like that. Of that nature.
Honey, I can't come over. I'm tied up right now. John Seidel, Chicago Sun-Times, is joining us. And the story that we all woke up to this morning, is that an alleged madam of a Chicago sex, and I'm putting this word in quotes, dungeon, is facing federal prostitution and financial charges. Okay, so here's what we know. Is it this woman who is in her, I believe, her 30s, right? 31 years old, single mom, is, and this, you know, this fits like the whole Breaking Bad profile here. She is accused of running a prostitution dungeon, five stories on the near Northwest Side. And she's, which clients would sign up for, to be humiliated, including a number of different rooms. Isn't that right, John? You had there was like a menu that you had if you wanted to go to this place, allegedly?
Yeah, I'd say they have a wide variety. They basically, stuff that I saw that basically just were there to help you live out your fantasy, whatever that fantasy may be. And they do have a, I'm actually looking at an ad now of all their, the various rooms they have available, including the office and the kitchen and the kinky bedroom and others, the roof. The list goes on. So, I mean, probably what you're talking about, and maybe some other things too.
So she's facing, serious charges, according to your article, up to 20 years in prison if convicted, and the forfeiture of the building. I guess she owned the building, was making allegedly...
Always important to buy the real estate.
...millions of dollars out of this out of this business. She says this was all legal business with consenting adults. I mean, if they're paying for the service and they're showing up for it, I guess prostitution is still an issue. I mean, where are the feds getting her here on this business?
So, you're right. There are several counts. They're alleging prostitution, and frankly, they're alleging financial crimes as well. That she did things with the money that are illegal to hide what she was doing. But you're right. Now her attorney is not shrinking from any of this. In fact, he's come out and he said there's absolutely no evidence that she engaged in any prostitution. He says that she's unaware if any occurred. And he told us, quote, fetish-based eroticism is not unlawful. I believe that was part of the argument that went on in court yesterday. I will say, there's some detail in the indictment. It's a lengthy indictment, but, has some details in it, including that she allegedly instructed one of her workers to have sex with a client whenever a client paid for that sex. So I think they have evidence for that if they're going to put that in the indictment. But of course, her attorney is insisting that that is not the case. And if any of that was going on, she didn't know about it.
Do they have any of the men who went to this business? Are they cooperating, to your knowledge? Is there an indication of that in the indictment?
I would suspect so, but they haven't come out specifically and say it. But the indictment does mention four clients, not by name, client A through D, who are mentioned in the indictment. And I would think that probably means that these clients are working with them, right? But we don't really know for sure at this point.
Yeah. I've covered cases like this before, and not only always here, but elsewhere. And it seems as if this particular style of business seems to attract high-profile and powerful people. And when it's revealed who were clients for these businesses, you're often sort of shocked that you know some of these names. I wonder if that will happen here, if there'll be a black book of sorts recovered from her, if she'll mention the clients or be forced to at some point. Do you see any of that happening?
It's possible, right? I mean, that's a question that I think came up in a lot of people's minds the moment we realized what we were dealing with here, that this was a high-end business. And a lot of people are speculating about whose name might come out. Now, that could happen if this goes to trial, especially if these clients have to testify, right? But I do want to stress that at this point it's speculation, but you're right. I mean, she was making millions of dollars, right, according to the feds, and this was not just like gathering cash. Like they were running credit cards in the building for this. Yeah. So and again, her lawyer insists that this was a legal business.
I just want to know, yeah, when the credit card bill comes in, what's the name of the institution on the credit card bill? Because there's a couple different things here.
You don't think it was Premier Dungeon of Chicago?
Yeah, maybe not. And she likes it. Kink Extraordinaires. That's a website. Says it offers beautiful, psychologically sophisticated kinksters. I like kinksters, actually.
Yeah.
Who play out a private 5-floor dungeon with multiple fully equipped themed rooms, 10 minutes northwest of downtown Chicago, with free and convenient street parking. Now, that's the important thing, because you know how
street
hard it is to find street parking in the city.
This is an issue.
That's going to get you there. And they have themed rooms such as the classroom. Oh, been a very, very naughty student. The medical room. I don't want to know about that one.
No.
I do not want to know. The gourmet kitchen. Oh, that's that. See, with they're sharp. No, I'm not going there. As I'm reading this, this is like when I'd walk out of the restaurant. There's the sissy room.
Huh.
I think I'm probably getting in that one. The roof.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means. And the man cave, which offers complimentary scotch. For $5,000, you might want to have complimentary something.
Is that how much they were charging?
What? I don't know.
Well, do you know, Jason?
I'm
not going to pretend that Roe doesn't know, and I'm going to ask you.
off the top of my head, I don't recall seeing an actual like charge per service in here. I think there were some dollar figures thrown around, but nothing specific like that. But you're right. Just to circle back what you're saying, you're right. They went by this name, Kink Extraordinaires. They did have a more professional sounding name, Selective Management Enterprises. That might be what pops up on the credit card. Who knows?
But that's SME. Right. SME. Honey, what is this charge for $5,000 to SME? Oh, honey, don't worry about it. You'll just be surprised at Christmas. And yes, she will. Right when the trial starts.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. John, thanks so much. John Seidel, Chicago Sun-Times.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Read him. Read his story. It's very, very good.
Surprised you didn't do your Chicago lawyer. This is a single mom, Your Honor, just trying to raise money for her kids. Save,
Your Honor.
Diaper money.
Your Honor.
It's a legal business, consenting adults.
Now, think about this. Not only do you have consenting adults, it's educational. They got a classroom. They got a medical room. They got a gourmet kitchen in case you want to learn how to cook. Your Honor, please, this is good, clean fun. They got a roof and they got a man cave. What could you possibly want? More than that. This poor woman is just trying to make a living for her and her son. That's all.
See where that goes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know these places exist.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, if these places didn't exist, Lisa Ling wouldn't have a show on CNN.
Stop. That's not what her show's about.
Well, I think she's done this.
She has gone into, the groups of people who this is their thing.
Yeah.
She's
doing that this year. It's like this new season of Lisa Ling on CNN is going to be swingers, nudists. Right? The porn industry, I think, is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that she's done this, this kind of a deal. I once went to a bar in New York that was, I was with a group of people. I don't know if they were my friends, quite honestly, by the time this was all said and done.
You learned things about them that night?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was my girlfriend at the time and some of her friends.
Okay.
And she's like, we're going to this bar. We go down to this bar somewhere, kind of in the Chelsea-ish area of Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing we're walking in and it's an S&M bar. And there are people literally hanging from the walls.
So you turned
full
over?
Leather, paraphernalia.
Oh.
The ball gag thing in the mouth and the whole deal. And they're just there. They're
just interacting with the crowd, those are the
customers? They're hung on the wall. They can't interact with anything.
Oh, gee.
Apparently, that's extra. You pay to be put in the gimp outfit and hung on the wall.
Or in the cage.
Yeah.
Hey.
And I'm like, I'll have a scotch, please, on the rocks. What is there? And I'm trying to avoid, I'm just trying to act natural at this point, right? Because I'm, okay, yeah, no, I'm, you know. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
And how do you act natural there?
Yeah, what do you do to act natural? In like your cravat and your penny loafers as you're sitting there and everyone's in leather.
I turn to the bartender and I go, could you put ESPN on the TV, please? I mean, it's like, you just sit there and you're like, okay, I'm not going to act like I've been here before. I'm just going to act like I'm not surprised by anything I see here. And maybe I'll get out of here alive. That was what I was like. And I was looking at this, and I just started dating her, so I wasn't really in a situation where I could, you know, like, make it, you know, like, I didn't want to, like, run out screaming, which was every one of my instincts, which would have put me right in the sissy room, by the way. That would have been the next piece. But, so I wanted to act, like, cool and see where this went, but not where it was going. It worked out.
It did work out.
We left about 45 minutes. Actually, what's interesting is a well-known international rock band of the era came into the bar. They became the attention, and they came in with an entire posse of people.
Oh, geez.
And so it got so crowded that, you know, we're like, hey, you know, we should probably just get out of here. There's got to be another place to go, right? Because the whole time I'm thinking, there's a guy on the wall. He's in a thing. He's got he's hanging from there. How does he let us know if he has to go to the bathroom?
Oh.
That's all I can think.
You were worried about him.
I was
concerned about his well-being.
He might still be there. This is like 20 years ago. The guy could still be there.
Oh. What an experience. Gosh.
Yeah. So that worked out to get out of there alive. That's in the book. That'll be in the end. That's the end of chapter 4.
Bring out the gimp.
The gimp's sleeping.
Well, I guess you just have to go wake him up now, won't you?
Okay. It's been a very educational show so far today.
Your Honor, it's educational. That was my favorite line.
All right. Adam Hogue is going to join us. We're going to talk about the Bears. He's our Bears insider, and we are preparing for our Monday night game in Washington.
We need to prepare early. It's Thursday. I mean,
And there's also, you know, it's Thursday night football tonight, and so the week starts with the people who are interested in the wagering and stuff like that. So this time, to, you know, you got to, this is it. This is the day now that you got to get your pools in and all the rest. You got to start thinking.
Right. Wagering is a lot easier now, too.
Yeah. Got to put your thinking cap on. And if you're listening to us in Indiana, you just pull out your app and follow along.
Mm-hmm.
In Illinois, we can't do that.
No, not yet.
No.
It's not happening.
Because they
yet.
Couldn't figure that out. Somehow Indiana got it figured out.
They got it figured out in time for the season, football season. Illinois did not.
No. I'm deeply troubled. I wish I were less deeply troubled, but I'm highly deeply troubled. So that's all coming your way with Adam Hogue, our Chicago Bears insider. Great. And we shall hear from him after Kim's News in 2 minutes. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Nice.
Okay. Here is our friend Adam Hogue. And Adam Hogue is our Bears insider.
And go Bears.
I'm conflicted, Adam.
Okay.
I have conflict. Let's start with the fact that I thought the Bears may not win a game for an entire decade after the Green Bay fiasco.
It was a pretty low moment.
Yeah. Then last week, I thought, wow, this team, it's got moments, but I'm really, the Trubisky performance is just so lackluster. I don't know how they're going to be able to do this. Defense looks, you know, good or great, depending on the moment, but not quite up to, I know Khalil Mack isn't exactly having the kind of season that he started off having last year, but I know he will. You know, I have great confidence in that. But the offense, man, I don't know. It's like, it's very vanilla. It's very cookie cutter. And Washington is 0-2 as they head in to play them at home, at their home. It seems to me like I got to be worried. Am I worried? Should I be worried?
Well, here's what I'll say. I think that this week we're going to get a little bit more of a concrete idea of where this team is at. Because I say that because, you know, you go back to week one. That Packers defense might actually be legitimate.
They're a good team, actually, right? We saw actually, what they did to Minnesota. Yeah.
It kind of looks that way, especially on the defensive side. And then you look at the Broncos, and, you know, to me, I went into that game saying that's exactly what the Bears need to do to win. Not let Mitch beat himself and run the football. So I'm not going to sit here after the game and after they won ugly and criticize them for that, because I thought that that's what that specific week called for.
Very fair. You're very, very fair, man. All right.
Now,
having said that,
Washington's defense is horrible. All right? They're 30th in the league in points. They're allowing 31 points per game already, 455 yards per game. That's also 30th in the league. And the Dolphins are in this league as well, if you haven't noticed. So that there are going to be some teams behind them. So this is where I think if we're still sitting here next week complaining about the offense and worrying about Mitch Trubisky after they play the Washington Redskins, then all right, I'm gonna say it might be time to worry.
Okay, all right. Yeah. You know when it's time for me to worry? All the time. That's
every
that's
day.
What I do every day, all the time.
You worry about all things for everybody.
Yes, exactly.
It's very
right.
good.
You know, John Fox did say one thing in his crazy 3 years that I tend to go back to all the time, and that is, in the NFL, it's either a crisis or a carnival every week. That was one of his go-to sayings, and it could not be more true. When the Bears lose to the Packers week one, it's full-on crisis, and then, oh, man, they should have lost to the Broncos. But the kick went in, so for the most part, it's been a carnival this week, although there are still concerns about the offense, and I get it.
Yeah.
Is everybody on board with the Eddie Pinheiro now? Are we all? Is that a secure position, do you think, for him for the season?
Well, until he misses, right?
Yeah, exactly right.
Say that.
Well,
it's not going to happen.
He's not going to be perfect.
No, and late in the season in Soldier Field with that swirling wind, I mean, when we get into November and we get into December there, it's a nightmare, right? I mean, kickers hate it there. And Denver is a great place for a kicker to kick because the ball goes forever, right?
And we're talking about a guy, too, that grew up in Miami, kicked at Florida in college, was, you know, it really has not kicked in cold weather yet. So that's still an unknown. I will say, though, this looks pretty good. With the kickers, it's all about, can they kick the ball far, and do they have confidence? Do they carry that confidence with them into every kick? And I love the fact that Eddie Pinheiro legitimately wanted that kick. I mean, you could feel it. He wasn't just saying that. You could feel that he really did want that kick, and he drilled it. So off to a great start, and really this is best-case scenario considering where this conversation was all summer.
For sure. And he does seem like a really he seemed relieved, I guess is the word I'm looking for. When he, it was like when the team rushed out, and I know you were there, so I, you know, your thought on this, Adam.
Sure.
When the team rushed the field after that, it was as though a curse had been lifted, right? It was like this was a turning point for them. It felt like a playoff win is what it felt like. Like they just won the NFC Championship, not quite the Super Bowl, but the NFC Championship, because they were so excited to get out there and they wanted to celebrate him. And you know, maybe this is the moment. Maybe that was, you know, the last nine. As I said, the last 9 seconds of that game were the only thing that counted, the only thing that gave you any kind of hope. There was 59 minutes and 51 seconds of pretty futile football, but then Trubisky, you know, get a little help from the officials, but then that pass that, you know, that got him into field goal position with the merciful 1 second left on the clock.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
You know, all of that. There was a little bit of luck, but that seems maybe to be a season turnaround moment, because if they had gone 0-2, I think you do have serious problems.
Yeah, I did sense a collective sigh of relief from the entire team. It goes back to last year. It goes back to the kicking problems, and then it goes to within that game and everything you just said, Ro. I mean, look, you should have won the game on the missed extra point, but Buster Skrine is offside, so now he's obviously relieved. You had a lead that you blew. Not you. You really, no one. No, come on, be honest. No one thought with Mitch Trubisky getting the ball back with 31 seconds left. I mean, it's nice and everything that Matt Nagy showed them the Saints game, and they had that in their mind, and they're talking about it on the sideline. But I'm sorry, there's a big difference between Drew Brees in that moment and the Saints offense and what you had seen from the Bears that entire game that day in Denver, which was next to nothing. So nobody thought, I guess except for them, maybe. I mean, apparently they really did believe it. But any of us watching, no way they were going to get downfield, and then you just barely get half a second really on that clock. It was just barely enough, and then it comes down to the kicker. You're like, again, it coming down, come on, the kicker again, and then he drills it. So yeah, absolutely. I don't really blame them for celebrating the way they did. It was it was something they all needed. So we will see here, because this is an opponent the Bears should definitely beat, even though it's a road game. It's Monday Night Football. Let's see if it carries on to this game. If they win convincingly on Monday night, I'll feel a lot better about where the season's going.
Do you see dramatic improvement on the offense? Do you think they're going to continue to trend upwards? I mean, I guess, what is it, 19 points in two games or even less than that, with most of them coming from the kicker, right? They're not scoring a lot.
Well, they're only averaging 9.5 points per game so far. Yeah, it's been tough. In one touchdown through two games, they've only been inside the 10-yard line once. In two games. So all the numbers I can give you, they're not good. That was certainly the message today at House Hall, and you always got to be careful about that, because there are some days where they come with a game plan like, hey, this is going to be the message to the media today. But Mitch Trubisky was openly talking about, hey, look, there's some holes in this Washington defense, and we need to take advantage of them. It's a new week. We're feeling confident. You know, the messaging was all on point today, as opposed to last week when he gets up there and he says, well, I was told not to talk about last week. From at least a PR standpoint, right, they fixed the offense.
Okay. Here's my concern. And I'm just going to say this because you got to deal with these guys every day. So you can feel free to go, Ro, that's inappropriate.
Uh-huh.
I got a feeling that Mitch Trubisky, not so smart. I'm getting this feeling that there's sometimes, you know, you look at him and you go, because he's got raw talent, right? I mean, he's got a good arm.
Oh,
he's fleet. You know, he's got capabilities. He just can't seem to put the ball exactly where it is, and I don't think he seems to understand exactly where the players are going to be at any given moment on the field. And maybe they may not be running the right routes. That has happened over the years, but still, you know, I'm not overly confident that this guy is going to handle a big, complicated thing. You know, it was one thing. You watched Joe Flacco walk up to the line last week in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy who won a Super Bowl. He is, you know, he's been around. He's, you know, one of the, you know, right on the cusp of elite quarterbacks in the NFL, right? He's probably in at any time, fifth or sixth best quarterback in the NFL. And you look at him, and you watch his eyes moving around, you know, just scanning. And it's like it's all clicking.
Yeah.
I don't get that sense. I used to get that sense about Jay Cutler.
You didn't get that sense.
No, I did.
You did?
Oh, yes, for sure. I think Jay Cutler knew how to read a defense. I just think that Jay Cutler didn't know what to do once the ball was in his hands. I think that was a different thing. He knew what was going on, but he was, you know, that's why he was always mad that the other players weren't reading the defense. Right? That he was always mad at somebody for missing an assignment. So this is, I get this Mitchell Trubisky feeling like, oh my God, I don't know if this guy knows what.
Well, here's why I do think we're reaching a very crucial point here in year three for Mitch. Because, you know, when I did my whole thing and I went back and watched last season, every single snap, you know, I did see a guy that got better and more confident as the season went along. So that's where I think everybody, you, me, all of us, we're all struggling with this, that, okay, that happened. Well, here's a whole offseason. The team seems to be good. They got this big game in week one against the Packers, and you were just expecting it to continue on, and the exact opposite happened. And so now I do sense here for the last 2 weeks, I'm a little worried about the confidence level, you know, in between the ears up there.
Yeah.
And I do think that this is... Look, I just hope that we're not looking back on week one 2019 as the game that derailed a promising quarterback career. I'm not saying that. I'm not putting out, you know, I'm just hoping that that's not where we end up. And I do think we're in this crucial point here over the next month or so, maybe, where this is either going to get back on track. He's going to start feeling confident. He's going to start to build on what I thought I saw in 2018, where he's reading defenses better because he's feeling confident. He's making, you know, I'm just not seeing those decisions. Bam, ball out, accuracy. That was what I thought I started to see as the last season went along. And that's not happening right now. So how do we get him to that point? That's the big question here. And I think maybe the Washington Redskins are the solution.
Adam Hogue, Bears Insider, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Now you definitely stay above the fray, you know, the Hamp and the OB with Kaz, and Carm takes it, you know, he takes it for the team.
For the entire
sports department, he stands there and he holds on. It's like a wing walker. He's holding on to the, you know, the top of the biplane. He's going, dear God, right? That's what he does. Now, they make the argument that the reason that this is as bad as it is because there isn't really a preseason. There isn't, you know, you don't have game conditions in practice, no matter how you look at it. You just can't simulate that. There's just not the stress of it. The timing is off. The offense isn't clicking because they just haven't spent enough time together really, really playing like that. And I know the argument is, you know, what difference does 10 snaps in a game make? Well, I don't know, but these guys who played the game seem to know.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Not fully. But I have been thinking about this a little bit. I mean, this is year two of this philosophy of barely playing or not playing at all in the preseason. And it's been slow starts offensively both of these years.
That's true.
So maybe there is
something
to that.
Well, it was a slow start in the first half of Green Bay last year. I mean, there was a defensive touch in there too. But there was, you know, they were moving. In the beginning, but I think that's because Green Bay was like, wait, what is this? Because nobody knew what they were doing. I think Nagy's a victim of his own success in some respects, right? They're kind of predicting what he's going to call. He's calling a vanilla offense, so now they're like, oh, we got this.
Well, right. That's what I think the Packers did so well in week one. It was the complete opposite of last year. I mean, they seemed to know exactly what was coming, and they did a tremendous job of scouting the Bears, and they were ready for everything Nagy threw at them in the first half, and I just think it was a snowball effect from that point. That's why I argued so hard last week that, hey, as boring as it might be, you got to shut this thing down. You got to run the football. You got to take what you can get from the Broncos and win ugly. And that's what they did. So I'm not going to criticize them for that. Now I want to see, though, how does Nagy adjust against a defense? Is he going to come up with new wrinkles? Are they going to open it up a little bit more this week? And will the offense take that step forward? I don't know. I could see why people will argue that now the preseason could help from an offensive standpoint based on what we've seen the last 2 years. What I don't really buy is the idea of conditioning. I think these guys are in condition.
I agree with that. But it's timing, though. It's knowing where a guy's going to be, being able to throw the... I mean, listen, he's anything over 15 yards is elusive right now in terms of passing. He's overthrowing, underthrowing. I mean, there's a lot of that. I just want to know, is there a missing playbook anywhere? I just want to know. Is there somebody?
Can we find that?
Yeah, because it's all on iPads now and stuff, right? I just wonder,
Roquan Smith lost his iPad. It was stolen out of his car like a week after he was drafted.
Yeah.
Did that ever come up anywhere, show up?
Like, I don't know if it did, but the nice thing about the technology is they could press one button in the house, haul, and wipe it out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's also two-factor authentication, so that's very important. You must have a token.
And you must have a massive thumbprint, just like Roquan Smith, in order to get in.
Exactly. All right, well, we wish, I don't know, it's feeling a little,
it's not time to stress yet. It's Thursday, Ralph. It's Monday night game.
Yeah, no, give yourself the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm going to join you guys again on Monday from D.C., and we can all stress together then.
Then we can stress.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Perfect.
And I just, you know, on prime time, because, you know, the Bears are spending a lot of time on prime time now, right? All three of these games will have been, you know, at least, if not a national game, a semi-national game, as a 3:25 start was last week.
Right. Yep. So is that reflective of the fact that the NFL thought that the Bears are going to be so hot this year?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Big market. The Bears bring in the ratings even when they're bad.
That's
true. So when there's even a promise of them being good.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another one. And honestly, Mitch Trubisky, his numbers on these primetime night games have not been good so far. So that's something he needs to turn around.
Yeah. Exactly. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe he needs noon starts.
Well, the good news,
he'll get them if the Bears suck, right? If they go like 2-6, they're going to get a lot of noon starts coming up in the fall and later in the season.
Well, the good news, Washington always loses at home on Monday Night Football. I think they're 1-6 in their last 7 home.
Hey, whoa, those statistics, throw them out, because that was, remember, Denver was like 20-1 on opening day at Mile High or whatever that is now.
Yeah.
All right. So, all right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Adam.
Appreciate it.
Adam, talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Feeling it makes me feel a little bit better. Not 100%. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
A win in court today for President Trump when it comes to releasing his tax returns. We'll bring you the ruling coming up.
Rococho with Anna DeBlantis, 720 WGN. We put the fun in GN. Even though there's no fun in G or N. There's
no,
an N.
I was trying to understand that.
There's an N. I don't know how it works. Don't ask
Could
a lot
you
of questions.
Fun? Would you? Hmm. All right.
Coming up on the program of Top 5-5, we're going to throw at you right here. Then Mr. Richard Roper will be here in the 6 o'clock hour. I should mention this. Because two movies, two gigantic movies, he is going to tell us whether to spend or avoid.
Okay.
On over the weekend. Downton Abbey.
I know.
I cannot wait for that.
So many fans in my family.
Me
of the
too.
Downton Abbey.
Huge.
Yeah,
remember that year when it was on, the finale was on the Super Bowl? We had, was hosting a party and half the people went into another room to watch that.
That's exactly what the Downton Abbey people would do. They put in a counter program. The only people in the world.
Who could get away with that?
Right?
The puppy bowl.
Right,
this is it.
That's it. Right, they just throw a bunch of puppies on so the kids could go watch something. Downton Abbey, the globally popular TV series, gets a big screen treatment. I don't even understand why they did this, but Richard will explain. And listen to this. Brad Pitt's new movie, Ad Astra. Mm-hmm. You have seen the, which is not Ed Asner. The first couple times I heard it, I kept thinking, they've done a movie about Ed Asner? Is he dead? Mm. No, Ad Astra is, some people are saying, one of the great movies ever made. So we'll find out from Richard Roper if he's in that group. But sometimes people see the great movies ever made and they go, what the hell was that? Too. So we will.
Brad Pitt is such a good actor, I have to say. I hope that's good.
Yeah. So Tommy Lee Jones. I mean, we can't really go bad with this. So.
Tommy Lee, too.
All right. Here we go. This is the most important part of the day.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, checking in at
number 5.
Iranian foreign minister was on CNN today. He's Mohammad Zarif, and he sat down with CNN's Nick Peyton Walsh. Exclusive interview, and he said, without question, that if the U.S. or Saudi took a shot at them, things would escalate very quickly. And then Nick Peyton Walsh asked,
what would be the consequence of an American or a Saudi military strike on Iran now?
An all-out war.
You make a very serious statement there, sir.
Well, I make a very serious statement about defending our country. I'm making a very serious statement that we don't want war. We don't want to engage in a military confrontation. We believe that a military confrontation based on deception is awful. We'll have a lot of casualties. But we won't blink to defend our territory.
Okay.
Chilling statement.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be helpful if you didn't blow up the oil fields to start this thing. I mean, that's one way of looking at it.
Why do they want to make that up, that it was from Iranian territory? The Yemenis have announced responsibility for that. They have provided information about that. They have answered all the Saudi disinformation campaign about the fact that they launched this attack against Saudi Arabia in self-defense. Now, they want to pin the blame on Iran in order to achieve something, and that is why I'm saying this is agitation for war.
Okay. All right, well, okay, so we had Congressman Kinzinger on yesterday, who is, even in this era of you're not quite sure what you're listening to when you're hearing it, right?
Right.
In politics, he's a pretty straight shooter, always has been with us.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he expressed great confidence in the intelligence that he has seen, that the stuff that is available in open source, that there is a clear way by which we would know that the Iranians were involved in it, and he believes that they were. Now, having said that, to say for the Iranian foreign minister to then blame Yemen for this. Okay. Well, the problem is that the Yemenis are financed and instructed and trained by the Iranians. You know, so it's the whole thing. It's a bad provocation. The problem is that Iran has been a malignant actor in the region for 40 years, and even more so now than they've ever been. They're emboldened slightly because, you know, for a lot of other reasons. But the Russians, the Chinese, that, you know, everybody's kind of interested in what's happening here. Syria is up for grabs. Everybody is jockeying for position, and this is a very dangerous time in this very dangerous space. And they're trying to push. And, you know, as critical as I have been of the president for a lot of, you know, things, this is one of those moments where we all have to kind of turn and look at this and decide where are we as Americans. Now, the president, I give him credit for this. When he said that, you know, he doesn't want to jump in to war here, as Lindsey Graham, he kind of castigated or chastised Lindsey Graham over the weekend for shooting his mouth off, you know, about the weakness that, you know, we had a bad response to them before by not doing anything after the drone shoot down. I think that the president's instinct to keep his powder dry until absolutely necessary, you know, is one of the more admirable things he's done as president. So we'll just have to see. I don't think this. I wouldn't want to rush necessarily into this, but you got to. But there does have to be a conversation.
13% of people in the U.S., according to a poll today, would back the U.S. military going into conflict, supporting Saudi Arabia as a result of this. 13%.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
One in four say the U.S. should remove itself entirely from the affairs of the region, let Saudi Arabia handle its issues itself. Congressman mm-hmm. Kinzinger gave the argument about why we need to be involved. You can't let that whole region blow up.
Right.
And
Saudis are not our buddies either. I mean, we want to get along with them. We've always had sort of that, you know, that's like, well, you know, they live in that neighborhood. You know, they got to do what they got to do. They were never good friends with Israel. They were never good friends with a lot of the other players in the region. The majority of the September 11th hijackers came from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
I remember that.
Right. Bin Laden himself, Bin Laden's father was a big industrialist and real estate guy in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I mean, this is, and they've been exporting sort of a dumb guy version of their foreign policy and an interpretation of the Islamic religion that is oversimplified, very much oversimplified for the express and specific purpose of creating jihadis. And that is something that is just, you know, it's a tough place for us to be. So, I'm just saying, watch this space. Checking in at
number four.
All right. Speaking of great political analysis and prognostication, the yep. NBA, you know, is just rife with great philosophers of politics and social movement. There are a few. Oh, mm-hmm. For sure, there are a few. Charles Barkley comes to mind immediately. In an interview on SiriusXM, slammed Democratic politicians for taking the African-American vote for granted and highlighted his experience working with Senator Doug Jones during his 2017 special election victory against the disgraced state Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore.
When I campaigned with Doug Jones in Alabama, I said, Doug, I'm going to support you and I'm going to try to get every black person in Alabama to vote for you. And it worked out. We won for the first time in 40 years. But I said, we need to start holding you Democrats accountable because they've been taking black people's vote and they only talk to black people every 4 years. All these politicians only talk to black people every 4 years because they want their vote. Oh, actually, the Republicans don't. The Democrats do. But when they get elected, they do nothing in the 4 years in between.
Well, he's, you know, it's interesting. There was a time where people thought he was going to run for the U.S. Senate.
Oh, right. Remember, he was named a number of times for governor as well.
In Alabama.
He's thrown his name out there for a number of positions.
Here's where he lands on Trump voters and the economy.
First of all, I don't think everybody who voted for Trump is racist. I think some of them are. But this thing started way, way back. You notice now that all these malls and places are closing because people are doing all their shopping online that has a negative effect. That's not the president's fault. It wasn't Barack's fault. It won't be Trump's fault. And now there's a cumulative effect. And now we're trying to get it all back from China.
I think we replace Biden with this guy.
makes a lot more sense than Dennis Rodman, for sure.
But
it's so a different planet.
Funny you should mention Dennis Rodman, also the NBA. Yes, oh. Dennis Rodman joined Fox and Friends this morning.
People don't understand is that I'm actually changing the world.
In what way?
In what way? Just like Donald Trump said, you know, let's make America great. And Dennis Rodman's trying to change the world and all the things I'm doing. Guess what? I'm trying to get my life better, stuff like that.
Okay. He didn't name one thing that
right.
he did.
Well, he's trying to get
like
his
that.
Life better. That makes the world better. That makes
well,
us all
that might.
Better.
That might improve things.
Yeah, if as long as he feels good, it's okay. But here's the chilling thing.
Okay.
Here's the chilling thing. This is what he said about Kim Jong-un.
I just think the fact that I did have an impact on some of the things that's happened sure. in our career. And I think that the fact that Donald Trump is doing a great job is trying
can
to connect
he,
us.
Can the president make a deal with him?
I think he can. And I think the fact that people better watch out for this. Kim Jong-un will be in America in 18 to 24 months, I guarantee you. He's coming to do one thing, to visit America.
Why do I believe him?
Oh, I think 24 months is wrong.
Why do you say that?
Well, 18 to 24 months.
Oh, because
you
the
know,
president
the election,
would be.
Yes, would be in between. And there's, elections. I think there's a possibility that Donald Trump doesn't win the election. So... That's that I don't think Kim Jong-un, I don't think Biden's having Kim Jong-un or my new president, President Barkley, is going to have him over.
Is
either.
There still time for him to get in?
I think so. And what is it? Rahm Emanuel was the one who said he doesn't think that the guy who's going to be a man or woman who's going to be the nominee is in the race.
That's
yet.
That's what I heard. And I thought there are a lot of people in the race right now.
Yeah.
I thought we were sort of whittling down the pack, but maybe there are more entrants to come. And one could be Dennis Rodman or Charles Barkley.
Mm-hmm. Or Rahm Emanuel.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Emanuel Buttigieg.
Could happen.
All right. It's time to find out from Kim what's happening in the news at the bottom of the hour.
Roe, Amazon wants to lower its carbon footprint. We'll tell you how an Illinois company is involved coming up.
Sunday on WGN-TV, celebrate the 25th anniversary of the hit TV show Friends with the pilot episode and episodes of memorable moments. It's 25 years of Friends, Sunday night at 6 on WGN-TV.
All right, the Top 5 continues.
Number 3.
Seems like every show is celebrating a 25-year anniversary
and
this year.
And it all falls right at the same time. Yeah. The WGN-TV morning show included.
Right. ER, now the newest one to celebrate 25 years.
25 years.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, so, Juliana Margulies, you know who starred in the show for the first 6 seasons, right?
You know her.
And then went on to... She came back in the last season, the finale. But she's been on The Good Wife. For the last number of years. Mm-hmm. And she thinks it's very interesting that because ER has moved its way over to streaming services,
mm-hmm.
that she's having a bit of a resurgence.
No one would stop me in the street about Carol Hathaway in the last 10 years. It was always Alicia. Suddenly there's this younger generation coming up going, wait, are you Nurse Hathaway? And it's this whole resurgence of a life I lived almost 20 years ago. And it's remarkable to see that show is aging so beautifully that it doesn't really age at all.
That is pretty remarkable.
We're so happy for her.
Well, why not? How many shows do that?
That's true. Well, that Clooney, right? Well, I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
Right? Clooney had been on, what is it, Facts of Life or whatever? What the hell show was he on?
What was he on, ER?
No,
I only know him from ER.
No, he was on a show before that.
Like a regular show?
Yeah, one of the kid sitcom shows.
Oh, gosh.
Facts of Life, right?
He was on Facts of Life?
Yeah, it was a boyfriend or something on Facts of Life.
Oh, okay.
Right?
So then, he was like a guest role kind of on...
Well, I was, you know, I was a regular at the end of the run.
Didn't he appear on Friends as well?
I watched Facts of Life.
Yeah, but he appeared on Friends as in a crossover episode with Noah Wiley as potential dates.
Oh, right. I remember him, too.
For Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox. Because those were the two shows started same time on NBC on Thursday nights, right? That was the Seinfeld night. and Mad About You and that and you know all that stuff. So pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. Or not. All right, and checking in now at
number two.
Okay, who is not a fan of a little impromptu serenading? This happened in a store, a Walmart Supercenter in Alpharetta, Georgia.
Nice.
Two people going down, two strangers apparently, going down an aisle. One's humming, one's singing. They stop, they have a little conversation, and they decide they're going to do a duet. How about that? I don't know. When does this happen?
Cool.
If This World Were Mine by Luther Vandross and Cheryl Lynn, they decide, hey, do you know the words to that? Yeah, I know the words to that. Okay. Then they started singing it, and then people started going, hey, I'm going to make a viral video.
I'd give you the flowers, the birds, and the bees, and it'd be your love beside me. That would be all I need if this world were mine. I'd give you anything.
You know, you gotta have the chops to pull that off.
I mean, perfect harmony. Look at that in the Walmart. What a beautiful moment. How often do you see something like that?
Might be the nicest thing you've ever seen in a Walmart.
Excuse me. I got to get my Tide Pods. Could you just move out of the way?
Move out of the way. Yeah, somebody had to do that, right? So, I mean, this is, oh, that is so great. How cool is that? I was once at O'Hare, and this guy stood up on top in the food court of a table, got on top, and he started doing opera. And all of us just stopped, and it was just another beautiful moment, much like this one, where people are just like, human.
I'd have called security.
No, I thought it was O'Hare. It was amazing.
I don't want anybody
He was so good.
I don't want anybody not even walking in a straight line at O'Hare. I get very nervous about the whole thing. All right,
That's
and
cool.
finally.
Number one.
So it was Mitchell Trubisky's day at Hallis Hall. He had to answer questions. Because last week he was told he shouldn't answer questions. So this week he was asked just really this simple question.
How is your confidence right now?
It's good. You just got to believe, like, this week is going to be the week. So we haven't been executing the way we want to. There's definitely some things that we're missing on film, but we're coming together, and we're correcting them. And the most important thing to me is that my guys still believe in me. I believe in myself, and that we're one unit. We're together. We're sticking together. And we're going to do what we got to do to correct it. And we got to believe that, like, this offense can explode at any minute because of the playmakers and the special guys we have in the locker room. So we just got to keep believing that, believe in the plan, have a great week of practice, and then go out there and execute it on game day. That's most important.
All right. That's what you want to hear, Ro.
I did not believe that he believed any of the words that he just said.
How much did you memorize? How much did you mean it?
My guys are behind me. I'm behind him. Yeah, that's right. I like beer.
Right. That's what's most important.
OB, what do you think?
He throws 3-yard passes, 6-yard passes. How many times when you ever see him trying to extend a pass maybe over 15 yards? One time he overthrew the receiver by 5 feet and threw it 8 yards out of bounds. Somebody explain to that kid that you got to be in bounds.
Oh, no. Well, let's hope Monday night is great. So,
yeah, let's hope.
Let's just hope.
I got hope. Yeah. Hey, listen,
hope and prayer. Does that count?
Yeah.
For football?
He is our only hope. Right?
Well, thanks to Dennis Rodman working on himself, I think it will get better because apparently the rest of the world will get better. So
true.
That includes Trubisky.
Right, exactly. Maybe Dennis Rodman can come over and help Mitch Trubisky feel better about himself.
That's not too hard.
I look out for this thing. Right. Guess what? I love when Dennis does that.
Guess
you know,
what?
That's three martinis in when Dennis says, guess what?
And you don't want to ask what.
Yeah. I don't want to. Right. I don't want to know.
You don't ask what.
You're in charge of our thermonuclear negotiations.
Just stay focused.
with North Korea. Because that's the world we live in.
Watch out for this.
Oh, boy. Yeah. How many times do you think he said that? That's like
a go-to line.
That's
for
a nightly occurrence right there, don't you think?
Watch out for this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. All right. That's going to hurt. All right, let's see. You know what we got to do here? We got to close this thing up, and then we got to do the news.
The top five at five.
Pro Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right. Hey, you know what? We often make fun of the kids, you know, in the college and their love of fraternities, bad behavior, and beer.
And of beverages course, now, in general, because we had the White Claw segments. Mm-hmm. No one can forget.
Exactly.
Becca and such.
Brad, and Becca. Anyway, here's a good story. ESPN is reporting this, that during the Iowa State, ESPN does that college game day every
which
Saturday morning.
I love. I think there's so much energy to that game. I get interested in a game, even if I'm not have any kind of allegiance to the college or university.
Always find a great sign too.
Right,
that's so true.
A sign or a flag,
so
or there's people out there that are just kind of doing the right thing. And they didn't. It's funny. ESPN didn't even have that game. That game was on Fox.
Oh,
the Iowa State game.
A lot of delays in that game.
Yes, there was a 3-hour rain delays in that game, but. There was a kid from Iowa, had the beer money sign, Venmo me, the beer money, I just need beer
awesome.
Money, right?
Because usually it's the parents, Venmo me a little money, I need a little money for this, for that. Mm-hmm. And you don't usually say it's for beer, but it is.
Yeah, exactly. So now, actually an Iowa State fan, I should say, was the one, Carson King, asked for some money to buy beer with his game day sign. Instead, he will donate his proceeds, $67,000 so far.
What?
To the University of Iowa's Steed Family Children's Hospital.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Yes, right
Isn't
across
that
from.
Cool?
Now, this is really weird because it's Iowa State fan, and that is right next to Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City, right? That's actually one of the nicest traditions in all of college football now.
Absolutely. I don't think you can even hate it or even try to not like it if you're the biggest rival. It's just great.
Because the Iowa players, because the hospital, Children's Hospital, sort of is a fairly tall structure, and Iowa City is a pretty flat town, and not a lot of tall buildings. So this the Children's Hospital rises up, and right behind the stadium, and the Iowa players all turn. There's a prescribed moment in the game where they turn and they wave at the kids, and the kids wave back.
Oh, that is so cool. And it's such a respected hospital, too. I know a little bit about it. They have Bush Beer and Venmo have matched. Now the Children's Hospital will receive over $200,000.
Look at that.
So it is multiplying.
Right. I know. The guy got $67,000 by doing that.
That's insane.
All you got to do is, I got to go to one of those. I've always wanted to see this production in action because one of the most
dynamic
shows on television, College Game Day. And I just wanted, because I love when, coach puts on the hat or the head or whatever it is. I wait for that every Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe if I get a good enough sign. I would. I need bourbon money, though. That's what I. That's what
that's
I would
a little
like.
More expensive.
Yeah,
it's a little more.
Right. So I mean, that's just or I'm running short on cravats. Venmo me.
I don't know if you'd get the same response that this guy. This guy just seemed very earnest. He was like, "Hey, I just need beer money," and boom, look at that. I guess. So no one sent him beer, right? I guess you're just Venmoing, so it has to be the money. But he's sending it all to the hospital. Keeping, I think, enough for a case, he said, or something like that.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
It's very respectable because college kids make no money, generally. So, I mean, to be willing to give so much away for such a great thing.
Yeah. It's nice.
I'm impressed.
I don't think you can keep the $67,000 because I think that's bad magic
that.
Right there.
It totally is. That would not be good for your karma situation.
Yeah.
I always wonder how on college game day, how do they keep bad signs out of the way? Do they go through there like it's a studio first and kind of pluck, there's always that guy, right, who's going to have the inappropriate sign, you would think. And they always keep him out. He's not there. You don't see him.
There might be good camera work, working the angles.
Mm-hmm.
But also,
there's so many signs, though.
No, sometimes you see them.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Some
have snuck by. College kids are ingenious. They got a lot of time on their hands.
Right.
They got time to, the
Very
whole idea.
Creative.
Theoretically, the idea of college is to go there and think. So there is a, even though that is not exactly what my experience was, but still, that's the general idea.
Sure.
So I go to watch that. I'm very intense about it. Sometimes I'll tape that show and look for signs. To kind of get on.
You just kind of, freeze frame it and check it out.
Because they'll get past something. But I know they have producers out in the, out like out there roaming, undercover producers who are looking for dirtiness and other kinds of bad behavior. People got to get there at like 4 o'clock in the morning too, so you know they're drunk from the night before. I mean, it's like
they look very energetic for having been there at 4 a.m. But you're right; there's some enhancements going on there.
Right.
But I mean, he even called it out. Bush Light. I want money. Venmo me money for my Bush Light. Ugh. And this guy, he didn't have to tell anybody, did he? I mean, it's his own personal Venmo account. He could have, you know, kept some all of that money, most of that money. But instead, I mean, I give him
it works
so much,
out much better this way.
So much credit.
Yep.
So much credit. That is awesome.
There are still good people in the world.
See?
That's all good. You damn right. Hey, did you see this story that smart home devices? I've been worried about this.
Okay.
Smart home devices, such as televisions and streaming boxes, are collecting reams of data, including sensitive information, such as where exactly in the house the box is located.
How does it know?
I don't know how it knows.
Do they have cameras now, too? Well, I know some of them do, but the ones that we don't think have cameras, do they have cameras?
Well, remember, it was revealed that they have audio capabilities.
Right, they're recording you.
Even when it's a Nest. Remember, Nest got into a lot of heat because it wasn't typically, you know, controlling anything that required audio at the time, and then suddenly put out the press release, hey, we're audio capable now that that technology is here.
Yeah, they were like, we have
guess
it.
What?
We just don't use it. We swear.
Right. We're not listening to you.
We're in your house, but don't worry. We have not been listening to you. We're just capable of doing that.
But it turns out that at Amazon, you know, had to just come out and say yes. They, you know, for quality control purposes. And so to make her more knowledgeable about, you know, what to listen for and, like, you know, not just her awake word, but also what else makes, you know, let's call her Alexa for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What makes her better at understanding you is that she has to learn you. So what we do is sometimes we will send recorded pieces that we've recorded surreptitiously, but you okayed it because you checked the box.
I agree. Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was your fault. I know that it was 65 pages of very fine print, and you can't edit it out and say, well, no, I don't agree to this, but I agree. You have to agree to everything or agree to nothing.
It's like an iTunes update.
Right. You either bought it or you didn't. Right? You bought it. If you don't want it, return it. Not going to go to the store. I'll just agree. So they recorded this, and they were sending it, and they had to acknowledge that, yes, from time to time, they do hear the individuals involved in moments of intimacy.
Oh, God.
That's why I put my smart speaker devices in the refrigerator at night.
Why? They totally cannot.
They can't hear in there.
They can't hear.
No. They can't breathe in there. There's a lot of things.
No wonder your smart speakers are all very angry at you.
Yeah.
Siri doesn't like you.
She does not talk back to me.
They're like, doo doo, Ro, it's cold in here.
Hello, Ro.
Sorry, I can't do that, Dave. I don't understand how we're at. What? How I should feel about that? Quite honestly, that's the thing. It's like, all right, okay. So what?
Okay, so if they want her to learn, why don't they teach her manners to shut off when they hear anything? That'd be like, oh, okay, maybe this is a private moment.
Alexa, earmuffs. How about that? Is there a setting for that? And then you could, you know, and then you do un-earmuffs or something.
But how sad is it that you're going to need to be thinking about your smart speaker every time?
Right. Everything you're doing in your own home, you're
right.
Worried about what your speaker is picking up.
Yeah.
Have you ever had one of those unexpected moments when they just start talking and you haven't alerted? That freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why. That just freaks me out a little bit.
Got me.
Or they join in the conversation or appear to.
Yesterday on the air. What's her name over here on my phone
started talking to me.
You. Yeah.
You didn't even say her name.
No.
Just started talking to you.
And I'm like, what do you want? They're listening the whole time. And I don't exactly know what they're taking out of it. I mean, you got to figure that the Chinese and the Russians and the, I don't know, Colombians, I don't know who else, the Iranians, you know, they got smart people over there too that have figured out how to hack these things, right?
Sure.
I mean, they're not going to learn any state secrets from me. They're actually going to, you know what? I'm going to tell you that after about 20 minutes of listening to what happens in my house, they are basically going to go, all right, we're done. They're going to quit the business is basically what they're going to do, the spy business. I'm so disgusted by this. I refuse to go on.
Don't you just kind of have to sort of be defeatist about it and say that they're listening to everything? Isn't that just what you sort of sign up for? I don't know. I mean, I don't know a way around that. You wish it weren't true, but I feel like it is.
Yeah. Especially with the weird ads that pop up on your phone, though you've only said something about it,
exactly,
you didn't research anything.
It happens to me all the time.
I haven't
even put anything into a computer in writing and just verbalizing.
Sometimes I'm just thinking about things and I'm like, what?
No, that's the weird part. When they get a control of your mind, then you know you really have a smart speaker problem.
It's like they're in my dreams.
Sometimes I don't even want anything, and the smart speaker will communicate it to me somehow without saying anything.
So weird.
It's kind of crazy. I'm disturbed by the entire thing. It's funny, though. I get ignored more than... Like, when I say things out loud to my smart speaker, half the time, she doesn't respond.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm like, well, if I'm... And then next thing you know, she's going to be able to discern heavy breathing and grunting.
Hey, I know you're listening. Answer me.
Exactly. That's on the TV, I swear to God. That was on the TV. That was not me.
I bet she can discern between the TV and
I was working
I
out.
I think she can.
That was an exercise.
Better. That would be better.
Right. You have to make the same excuses to your smart speaker you did to your parents. And that's a problem. All right. Let's check in with Kim and see what's going on in the newsroom for the top of the hour.
Roe, the CDC is still trying to determine why so many people are getting sick from vaping. We'll have the latest coming up at 6.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Bridget Roper is going to be here. Downton Abbey and Ad Astra are movies coming out this week. We're going to find out if they're any good.
Brad Pitt, Tommy Lee Jones in Ad Astra.
Mm-hmm.
And we know all about the Downton Abbey. Didn't know there was going to be a movie, but...
Didn't everybody die of consumption or something in that show? I only saw the first season of that. And yet one woman dropped out of the flu. And that was, you know, as television deaths go, it was pretty grotesque. And then you got the guy with the spinning wheel at the end of the first season. You got a guy, all of a sudden, you got a car turned over and a wheel going around and around and around. I like that guy. And then after that, I'm like, oh, they're killing too many people. I'm not all that interested. So now, here we are, years later, and there's an actual movie, so they all got to be alive, right?
Well, I would think so. There's got to be some interesting turn there.
Richard will be here next
week. I like the cast so much. They're such good actors.
Well, they're British. You know, they got the British accent, so you figure they're good actors.
Well, whenever you see interviews with them, too, they just seem like fun and interesting people. So I don't know. I kind of fell in love with some of the characters.
And it's just the most beautiful movie.
Yes. Cinematography standpoint.
And the costumes.
Amazing. Yes.
Absolutely. That's what I go to the movies for, costumes. Okay, let's do this. We got the news coming your way in 2 little minutes. When I hear this music, I just can't get the image of that woman spitting up blood in her bed right before she died from the flu.
That's what you think of?
Yes.
I think so many other beautiful scenes. Come on.
I think of the lovely scenery, the drama.
Many wonderful Christmases and weddings, and he keeps on a couple of deaths. It was in the 20s, and it was the teens.
Yeah.
So the series started in the 1919s.
Right.
World War I was happening.
Right. It was the Spanish flu outbreak of 1918. Okay, fine. Yeah. But still, it was bad. I mean, I barely got over that episode because all I could think about the entire time was, oh my God, I'm going to get the flu.
Oh my gosh.
Richard Roper is here.
Hello.
And his reviews are being sponsored by Archideck of Chicagoland.
So here we have it, the Downton Abbey movie. Mm. Now, of course, as people know, the globally popular. That was one of those shows that was like the number one, places you didn't know they had public television.
Mm-hmm.
They loved the show in Turkey.
Interesting.
All over the world, they love the Downton Abbey. People just love it. It's such a beautiful thing. Upstairs, downstairs, soap opera plots.
What's not
beautiful
to love?
People to look at.
You know, and something you could watch with your kids and not have to anybody could watch that. Grandmas and kids. Right, multi-generation.
And if you call right now, you can get this beautiful Downton Abbey tote bag and the entire series run on DVD and VHS for those of you who haven't changed with the times.
Okay.
So You know, the movie, like Anna was mentioning earlier, it did come as kind of a surprise because it's not like a lot of shows like The Sopranos where you're like, oh, God, I wish they could have picked that up with the movie when we still had, you know, James Gandolfini, or even Breaking Bad, which we're going to get a sequel a little bit later this year, because this one just ended with a lot of happy endings and off they went into the British sunset, you know. But, you know, I think because it was so popular and so Julian Fellowes, who, you know, the creator and the writer and et cetera, the showrunner.
Pleasant name.
Julian, hello, I'm Julian Fellowes. That's exactly
who you think would be behind
that. So you got everybody, pretty much everybody who hadn't been killed off in the series is back for the movie. And people are asking me, like, well, is it one of those things where I have to have watched every episode of the TV show? Well, if you did, you're going to enjoy it a lot more, of course. And it takes place only about 18 months after the events of the series finale. But even if you've never seen it, you can kind of pick up what's happening because the characters are so well developed and well drawn. You know who the servants are. You know who the upstairs people are. And the main plot here is that, you know, Downton Abbey, they're always trying to figure out how they're going to finance the future. Are they going to get another inheritance? It's a whole thing to keep the whole thing running. Mm-hmm. And now the king and queen themselves are coming to visit.
So stakes are high.
Yes, they've got it. Everything must sparkle. Exactly.
What year does this pick up?
1927.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So the king and queen are coming for a visit at Downton Abbey's in a tizzy. Now, for those who did watch the show.
Now, the show only took you up to 1927?
It took 1925. It started, I think, in about 1917.
Anybody else drop dead of consumption or anything?
Everybody's good. People will remember that Carson, he was the head butler with the real lady. Mm-hmm. At the end of the series, he had retired. It looked like he might be starting to get some Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. And he was just older. So he's living on the grounds, though, because, you know, they all have all these little cottages and everything for the servants. So he's living in retirement. And Mr. Barrow is now the head butler. Now, Mr. Barrow had been a villain in many cases throughout the series run, but he kind of had redemption.
Okay.
But now, our Lady Mary Crawley is worried that Barrow's not up to the task of handling the royals, so she pays a visit to her beloved Carson.
Carson.
My lady, please come in. This is an honor.
I don't want to be a nuisance, but I need your help, Carson. Barrow just isn't up to the task.
My lady?
He won't clean the silver, or he won't let Andrew clean it.
What?
He says the page of the thingamy will choose which pieces to use.
I see.
The truth is, he's in a sort of trance. Won't you help me? I feel I'm pushing a rock uphill.
I'll be there in the morning, my lady. Don't you worry.
You're a treasure, Carson. That's all there is to say. I'll see myself out.
May I just ask you?
I just want once in my life for someone to say, "You're a treasure, Richard." That's all there is to say.
I want to use I'll see myself out. Because you just, that's like a mic drop back in, you know, England in 1925.
That little bell. Ding, ding, ding.
I'll see myself out.
I would just like to say that this show reeks of white privilege.
Yes, well, I think the working title was White Privilege, and then they decided to go with Downton Abbey. Yes, that's exactly what it's about.
Oh, my God.
So here's the deal with that. That's exactly what you're going to get there. All the familiar characters. First of all, it looks amazing on the big screen, because the cinematography, that was always beautiful. The real high, clear castle, which to this day, you know, people can take tours of it, that Downton Abbey was filmed at. You know, to see it on the big screen and see all these wonderful actors, including, of course, Maggie Smith, Elizabeth McGovern.
She's still alive, and she's in this.
Dowager Countess is still walking with that cane and still just jabbing everybody with her wit.
All right.
So, was the movie necessary? No.
Oh.
Is it a treat? Yes, because it's just it's like going to a reunion, except for most reunions you go to, you don't want to see half the people. Here you want to see everyone. So I'm giving it a very comforting 3 stars.
Interesting.
In fact, it doesn't have a lot of, you know, they went in dark places in the series, as Roe mentioned. I mean, the people went off to war and didn't come back. There were, you know, terrible injuries and betrayals and deaths. This is a little lighter than that. It's more just like checking in on the characters and seeing how they're doing and seeing how their future is going to be laid out. So it's lovely. I think it's going to do really well. It's a box office that doesn't get attended to too much. It's the same audience that's watching Netflix series and Hulu series and Amazon series, and it's women who are 40 plus. And usually there's a film that's driven by that, Hollywood's always shocked to find out that there's an audience for that. Well, yeah, there is. Make movies for them.
Mm-hmm.
So this would have been George V is coming over.
Sure.
Along with Mary of Tech.
Yes, George and Mary.
Right. If she's not of state, she's of tech.
Yeah.
If you're a big fan of the Dr. Pepper
Well, and you know, that's the thing. If all that kind of stuff, it's just fun to see it. You know, you learn about the footman and the royal butler. That's what happens. The royal staff comes there, and then they're at odds with the servants at Downton, who are basically told, step aside. We're going to do all the cooking. We're going to do all the preparations. That's why Mr. Barrow wasn't polishing that silver, so to
speak.
Richard, does this wrap it up for good, or does it leave the door open for anything else?
Oh, it absolutely leaves the door, all the doors, including the servants' doors, open, definitely.
Okay,
I was thinking it would really be fun. I'd love to see them. They could pick it up in, like, World War II in the 40s,
yeah,
like 20
right.
years
like
later, 15
too.
Years later. So all the kids who are children here would be in their 20s and 30s, and the younger people would be the older people at Downton Abbey. But then think about a World War II backdrop for Downton Abbey and how that would have affected them.
Landing B-17s in the backyard.
Possibly. It's a big yard. It's 5,000 square miles or something. It's a ridiculous amount. I don't
know. And then they could do the great-great-grandkids. They could move up to that to modern day times where they're renting it out on Airbnb.
There you go.
You know?
Yes. Which they are.
Hey, look, Kanye and Kim are coming over.
That would be
they're
amazing.
They're doing their wedding here. They're renewing their vows. It's really cool. They would make like a reality show.
That would be actually fantastic. Oh, the wealth in Downton Abbey. I mean, that was always the fun. The Dowager Countess, she had the famous line early on in the series where she said, what is a weekend? Because, of course, she never heard of the concept
of a week
of having 2 days off. Just, what is a weekend?
Exactly.
That was on T-shirts and little, and you can get those if you call right now during this latest pledge drive.
I mean, phenomenally successful. The actresses were saying that it was a hit from moment one in England, and they weren't surprised by that. The next day, literally, they got the ratings. But that globally, they were so shocked.
That's the amazing thing, Anna. Like it just had, and there are making of documentaries and stuff, and the attention to detail, including like how many inches the knife is from the spoon and everything, was all meticulously researched, and they brought in experts. So everything that's being worn, every painting that's on the wall. All of that
true to the time.
And a terrific cast. In fact, a lot of those actors, well, they've been doing things for a long time. For like Hugh Bonneville, who's the Lord Grantham, who's got the dog that's always walking around with him. If you go back and watch Notting Hill, he's the doofus that asks Julia Roberts, what do you do for a living?
Oh, right.
And she's a movie star. Is there any money in that? And she goes, Mom, my last movie.
The brother-in-law.
Yeah.
He was the brother-in-law.
And he goes, oh, acting.
Oh,
tough job. What did you get for your last film? I said, well, $15 million. Yeah. He's been around for a long time. And Lily James, she's the only one that from the cast that's really not in this one because she's too busy doing movies. She was in Baby Driver and all this other stuff. But Maggie Smith and her cane, she's still there.
I mean, it is a beautiful thing. It is real. It
music's
is
beautiful.
It's escapism.
100%.
That's true.
Yeah,
very true.
At the screening I went to, some women wore hats like you do when you watch the Kentucky Derby. They wore the big hats like they.
Well, that's against the rules in a movie theater, isn't it?
My feeling is the same thing as when you see people wearing hats to a Kentucky Derby viewing party in Chicago. Unless you're there, leave the hats at home.
No tea served.
At
any point did you snatch the hat off their head?
The hats were there was an announcement asking the ladies at the hats to take the hats off so that the four rows behind them could see the actual movie screen.
Well, that's not right.
Downton Abbey, the movie. There you go.
Grandma, you can't wear a hat. All right. We're going to find out if this Ad Astra movie.
Brad Pitt.
I swear to God, when I was hearing like the commercial, when I didn't see the commercial,
yeah,
and you could hear it like TV's on, you're not looking.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt, Ad Astra, and I thought, why is Brad Pitt and Ed Asner, and why are they in a film together?
That would be a good movie.
Yeah,
up two.
But we're going to find out. Okay. Some people, there are the commercial claims that the reviewers say it's the finest movie ever made.
Let's see if that's true.
Who are these people?
We're going to find out from Richard Roper if that is in fact the case, coming up in just a moment here. But Brad Pitt and Tommy Lee Jones, I don't know how you go too terribly bad here. But first, let's check in now with Kim. What's coming up with the news at the bottom of the hour?
A deal has been reached between the city and police supervisors. We'll bring you the details coming up.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city, watch Chicago's best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago, 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
Rococho with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. Richard Roper is in the studio with us, and he's got a review. He said he already gave 3 stars to Downton Abbey because it's comforting.
Yes.
Yes.
Comfort food.
Yep. Yes.
It's comfortable. It's if you love the series, you'll love the movie, right?
Just like those little cookies Carson would bring to you after your meal.
Yeah.
Some tea.
Tea and crumpets. And
Downton Abbey. Exactly. Mm-hmm. There you go.
All right.
Now, for something completely different, from Downton Abbey in the early 20th century to Ad Astra, somewhere in the near future where we've colonized the moon and Mars and are now going to Neptune and Jupiter and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Ad Astra. Everybody keeps asking me about Ed Astra or Ed Asner. And it,
no,
you know, it's a movie like this. It's almost asking for people to stay away because that title is it's a Latin phrase. OK, it's from per aspera ad astra, through hardship to the stars. Why not just say to the stars? How about that?
That would work.
Or trouble on Neptune, because that's the deal here. Really... So Brad Pitt is a veteran space explorer, you know, astronaut. His father, played by Tommy Lee Jones, is like the number one hero in the history of the American space program, according to this film, which is set maybe a couple hundred years in the future. He actually was the first one to get to Neptune, to get to Jupiter. Obviously, they go faster in the future than they can mm-hmm. now. And he was convinced there was intelligent life somewhere beyond Neptune and led a team there some 37 years ago and then has never been heard from since. And the belief is that he was killed somehow. And he's an American hero. Statues and monuments and everything. Now, the planet Earth is getting hit with these crazy electrical charges that could destroy the planet, and they have reason to believe that Tommy Lee Jones, who's Brad Pitt's dad in the movie, is the guy responsible for it. That he went full Colonel Kurtz, went up the river, has lost his mind, has become the enemy, so now they send Brad Pitt's character on this journey to see if he can locate his father. So it's very Apocalypse Now. It's also very 2001 A Space Odyssey, and like there's like 15-minute sections where there's no dialogue. And you want to talk about a beautiful, beautiful movie to look at, mm-hmm. but it's very deliberate and, you know, in some ways obtuse. And then all of a sudden you'll get like, I've never seen this. They actually have a shootout on the moon because there's some bad dudes that are living there as well.
With, like,
I've never
space
seen
guns?
Like, they got space guns, and they make really cool space noises, but there's, like, and they got, like, dune buggies, so you get a little Fast and Furious moment there for a second. The space, mm-hmm. space shootout.
Is the first car chase on the moon?
I believe so. Although I think Buzz Aldrin a couple of times just hit Neil Armstrong's ball into the rough. Neil, that's a bogey for you. I love the film, but I could see people walking out because it's, you know, it's got Brad Pitt does that kind of almost, you know, robotic type narration.
Yeah.
And it's a lot about the fact that he feels abandoned by his father, not just when his father went missing some 30 years ago, but that his father was never around for him and that he has become his father. His, you know, his girlfriend has just left him. Every astronaut who's ever gone up in space ever,
uh-huh.
there's a moment where you get to see the video of them with the wife and their right. little boy on the beach, but they've right. left by then. They're always on the beach.
Right.
That's always the scene to show the one moment when everything was great.
The wife left behind raw.
Yeah.
Is always
exactly.
part of
and,
it.
And in this case, it's because he was closed off. I'm giving 3.5 stars to Ad Astra, but with the caveat, if you're expecting to see Ocean's 14 or Once Upon a Time in Neptune, you know, with Brad Pitt, it's a completely different film. He's great in it. He's always good.
Right.
But it's true. One of those kind of roles that you would have seen, like, you know, very stoic. You know, Gary Cooper would have played 50 years ago. It's not a big emotional role except for a couple of scenes. And he looks great. You know, he can wear a space suit like nobody's business. Let's admit it.
It's his space movie.
And Tommy Lee Jones, come on, right? I mean, there you go.
Yeah.
So 3.5 stars.
Yeah, Ad Astra.
So with all of the accolades that the commercial is letting us know about,
yeah,
is this an Oscar contender?
I don't think so. Although I could see for, you know, visual effects, you know, sound mixing, if you will, the
yeah.
technical awards like
those
that.
Things, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, the achievement in visual effects for sure. Maybe
so
cinematography.
If you're like a geek like mm-hmm. I am, and I'll watch 2001 A Space Odyssey every once in a
yeah.
while mm-hmm. just to go back to my Ooh. Childhood and watch it and get and because it is stunning when you watch it if you have the patience
absolutely
for it.
It has scenes like that too because people forget like 2001 there are some scenes like where they're kind of at the space station like they're mm-hmm. you know as is almost always the case in these futuristic movies all of this is commercialized you know the flights to the moon it's not being funded by the United States government. It's a private company.
Well, as it was in 2001.
As it was in 2001.
Pan Am.
Exactly.
They did not see Pan Am
see
closing.
Coming. So it's kind of interesting to see. And then there's a colony on Mars, you know, but it's still in keeping with the fact that they're beneath ground on Mars. You know, there's about 1,500 people, including some people who were born there, have never, because Earth is always, is on its last leg, so to speak. So they're trying to figure out where we can colonize. Now they're starting to think, you know, Neptune could be the new Mars. You know, sort of like Roscoe Village becomes the new, you know,
new hip place to live, right?
Yeah. They keep widening the bit. Is that really Neptune or Neptune adjacent?
This is really Logan Square.
Yeah.
I think, and this the is, realtors tell you that anyway.
I just found out Wrigleyville starts at Division Street, according to some people now. Oh, it's Lakeview. See, if you go on the roof and bend over, you can see the lake. There's your view. But it's a beautiful film, like just like Downton Abbey. But I mean, talk about, you know, completely different territory. You couldn't have two different movies. But Ad Astra. Worst title of the year, but one of the better movies.
All right. Okay, so you like it. But you got to know what you're walking into here.
Yes. I could see some people about halfway through saying nothing's happening, because nothing's happening in terms of like fast-paced superhero movies. No, nothing. But a lot's happening. It's just a lot more under the surface.
Well, that's like 2001. Actually, nothing happens in 2001. There's no narrative. That's the one thing that when you are done with the movie, you go, what just happened?
Well, there were some pretty good fights right at the beginning with those apes.
The apes,
with the caveman.
Yeah.
The bone.
That there was, there was that, but you got to kind of get through that. I don't like that part as much. And then you've got the most stunning visual scene at the end.
Amazing to this day. It'll give you MDMA, Molly headache if you watch yourself.
But it is, so do you get a little kind of like that something?
Yes.
Okay.
I would say yes. You get answers in this. It's not like it leaves it open ended. Is his dad really alive? Is he the enemy? Is he not? The issues are resolved. It's a self-contained film.
Right.
And very quickly, I want to mention Rambo Last Blood is opening tomorrow, and they're not screening it for critics. So in the interest of this fine audience, I bought a ticket like a human being does, and I'm going to see it tonight so I can tell you guys about it tomorrow. You can't keep me away just because you're not going to screen it for me.
Isn't that usually a bad sign?
Never a
good sign. That's what I would think.
Missing, you know, they send you a photo. Ooh, first look, the trailer for Last Blood. Ooh, Sylvester Stallone out rollerblading with his old friend Dolph Lundgren. And then I'm like, hey, how about the movie? Oh, we won't be screening that one, unfortunately. So off I go to the theater.
All right. Okay.
How do you do that? Do you, like, hand them a ticket? Do you print it out? Do you show them?
Oh, look at you. Look at you. He's got all the hacks, you know, like I've got the hacks at all the stadiums here. There's every theater that he goes to. He knows the bartender.
Sure. Well, it's my job. It's like it's your job. It's like when you go to the Hawks game with Roe. Yeah.
Right. We go through a secret door. We don't know, but suddenly there's a bar there. It's the same kind of thing.
Went to the Hawks game last night. I want to see the new scoreboard. Not finished yet.
It looks like it's the size of the ship in Ad Astra.
It goes from blue line to blue line.
Jeez.
It's ginormous.
Wow.
But all of the capabilities are not functioning at this moment. They're waiting for the opening night for that. It's up. It's, you know.
Did they finish the part where they're hanging it from very strong cables? Is that part finished?
Okay. Well, it turns out it's like a tetrahedral foil or something. It's a bunch of independent things.
Oh, wow.
That are all kind of interrelated up there. It's wild looking. I can't quite figure it out. I stared at it for two periods last night. Just trying to figure out what I'm supposed to see.
Wow, amazing.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see it.
Well, they're moving things around on it a little bit because they're trying to figure out how to, I think, to get into the game, and they want the audience there, and they want to be able to, you know, see certain things.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of different, but I think it's going to have, I'm told by insiders there that what you're seeing now in the preseason, for people who are going to go Saturday night or whatever in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be a totally different experience than what you're seeing there.
They're just the kind of beta testing, huh?
Mm-hmm.
iPhone 3 version of it. Cool, man.
That is cool.
Anyway, so that's my review. Not that you asked.
That's good. No, I like that.
Kim Gordon's got the news brought to you by Gale Street Inn. Concho with Anna DeBlanchis on 720 WGN. All right, now a couple of different stories that we need to share with you before we get out of here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I would like this to be explained to me. I'm not 100% sure that I understand this. We've been following this story for the last couple of weeks, months now, actually, about the Dillinger family.
Right. They wanted the body to be exhumed.
For a television show, the History Channel wanted to do a doc or part of a series on Dillinger. And is this really Dillinger who's buried there? They want to create a mystery where there really isn't one.
It seemed like it was all engineered by the History Channel at first. Like, why would you go through this vast expense to do this amount of time later? And that then we found out, okay, well, History Channel's behind it. Maybe they, you know, some kind of thing like opening Capone's vault.
Right. So History Channel has decided to go in a different direction.
And say, they're not doing it, right? They're backed out. So
it's not you, it's us. You know, we're going in a different way here.
It's not the right project for us at this moment.
So they dropped out of the documentary. Now, family members say that they still believe that that may not be Uncle John's body in there.
Right. So you know, they still wanted to go through this.
We know one way to prove it. Because Uncle John had a legendary which may or may not be there.
Yeah, this many years
later.
Wait,
I thought that was also in question.
If I'm them, I'm just going with that story. You know, if I'm a Dillinger relative, you know, my great uncle, he's a bank robber and everything, killed a bunch of people, but he did have a huge whoop.
Yeah, just look at the pictures.
Take a look at the picture right here. See this? See that? See the tent party over here? See this?
There's a court order to try to get in to access the grave. Cemetery doesn't like the idea, but they're like, we're going to do it. It's October 1st. There's some kind of a hearing for this.
I really don't understand.
I know.
Why that? I mean, seriously? All right, are you going to put it out on tour? Like, you know, come see Dillinger's body?
What do you do with that? You're right.
I don't know. I don't like the idea of this at all. Did you ever see that that Body World thing?
Yes, exhibits. That was at Museum of Science and Industry.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Where there was like human bodies.
It really was.
Human bodies that had been donated to science, and then they stripped them down to a bunch of different levels so that you could see what the, you know, what the organs do and what they are and what's happening there. And it was, and they were people.
They were real people live at one point, and their plasticated bodies were right there for you to see everything.
Yeah. Cause they did. They injected it with some sort of
thing.
They
had a special process to preserve.
That made the whole thing plasticky. So yeah, exactly. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm watching this thing and I'm walking through. And then, you know, there was a story that the guy who invented this process for doing this, you know, he had some interesting sociological thoughts.
Oh.
You know, historical thoughts, kind of a big fan of the sort of mid-century kind of, you know, the guys on the wrong side of the war.
Hey, you know what would be cool?
You know, but you always have those people who, you know, have like zero human empathy at all. And so they're like, I'll tell you what would be a good idea. If we could take all the bodies and strip off the skin and put this plastics. And so we can look at it all day long, make it in the eye.
And we all went.
Yeah. And we did. And that was the thing about that got me like totally freaked out was, you know, and I get it in terms of like a scientific pursuit. Sure. Maybe. You know, to go look at things that look like the human body. But really, I mean, that you know, there's Uncle John right there. I mean, when you said you were going to donate your body, you were thinking it was going to advance medical science. You weren't going to, it wasn't going to be $75 a ticket.
And remember, they were like, some of them were posed and according to the sport they participated in.
Yeah.
And things like that and kind of who they were when they were alive. And that sort of freaked you out a little bit.
Right. I mean, only if I'm allowed to come back. You know, like that's the only way that I'm doing that.
You can have my body, but I'm going to haunt you.
Yeah. I don't know. And what would my body be doing there? It would just be sitting on the radio, like with a microphone in front of it.
But in a screaming face, like forever. Can have a recording of it just playing on a speaker all the time.
Yeah. Look at the muscles in the mouth. Very pronounced.
The only ones he has. Worked out very nicely. Anyway,
I mean, John Dillinger, we have to get back to that. They're still digging him up, even though History Channel's not around.
Well, the family wants. I think the family probably wants to get another producer. You have to get an agent. Bubby, darling, sweetheart, listen, we can't do anything unless you've got the body. So if you get the body, we'll take a look at the body. We'll see. Maybe we can put the body on the road. I don't know. Maybe E's interested. I'll talk to the Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Maybe Real Cadavers of Cook County.
Ghost Adventures.
Body Worlds could have a featured exhibit.
Something. We'll find something. Just get the body and we'll figure it out from there.
What's interesting is how the History Channel was, first of all, we didn't know that they were involved in it. Then it was became aware that that's they were involved in it, and we thought it was because of them they were doing it. Now the family's going forward no matter what, and the channel is saying they're not involved and will not comment any further about why they're not moving forward with the product or the project.
Right.
We won't even comment.
Okay, so you understand what's going on here.
You kind of get the sense just by hearing the timeline there.
That it's basically they're like, we don't want to comment because they know they don't really have something here.
That's what you think, right?
This is 99% John Dillinger in this grave.
Because the family said they had proof that this is not John Dillinger. And they wouldn't really explain what it was, but they supposedly brought that to the History Channel, got their interest. And I don't know. We don't know if something didn't pan out with that or what.
Yeah. Like, it turns out it's John Dillinger. Because everybody's got, they actually probably have all the paperwork from all the way along.
Well, remember the FBI took the rare step of responding to those stories about it not being Dillinger. Because it started to have legs and just moved in the direction of, well, wait a minute, maybe it's not. And the FBI, and you rarely see them weigh in on these sort of stories of the day kind of thing. And they did, saying, we absolutely believe it's him.
Right.
Just stop with this whole, stop, just
and
stop.
Then, right. Then the History Channel calls up, their lawyer calls up the agent. You know, it's like, what are you doing here? Bobby, darling, sweetheart, listen, we're not 100% sure. Just because the FBI says it could be fake news. Let's dig them up. Oh, man. All right. Well, we'll see.
I'll see.
On the other side of the break here, I want to share with you what is the worst. This for a month and a half, our producers have been trying to get us to tell this story, but the White Sox keep popping up. Mm-hmm. So I want to tell, this is the worst idea of 2019. Perhaps actually the worst idea of the last 30 years, I think is arguable.
Is it over now, or is this idea still in circulation?
Oh, no. It's going.
Oh.
The worst idea for a product ever.
Hmm.
But first, John Bernfield has the news at the top of the hour. What's going on?
Well, President Trump got a win in court today, and also Anthony Rizzo back in the Cubs lineup. What a surprise. That's all coming up at the top of the hour when we have the news.
Brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation is Lauren Lapkus Traffic. I'd like to make a public apology to Jordan Bernfield, not John. John is his cousin. Jordan is the newsman.
We like Jordan better.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. Worst idea.
Okay. 2019.
Of the 21st century.
Okay. You're broadening it out a little bit.
Have you seen the limited series Chernobyl?
Yeah.
On the TV?
Yeah. Okay. Great series. Yeah.
Right. Turns out that Chernobyl was much more of a disaster than we ever knew. We didn't understand exactly what was going on there. Because they didn't let it, because it was, the old Soviet Union. They didn't want to let us know. It's probably, one of the things that took down the old Soviet Union. Because the new guys are so great. Who knows? Anyway, the point is that one of the things that you see in that series is the devastating effects of the exclusion zone. Which is where people couldn't go. And if you spend any amount of time there, I mean, almost everybody who spent any amount of time in the cleanup and stuff died.
Yeah, cancer and stuff.
Right. And the people who were there in the first hours had horrifying deaths, right? That over a series of days or weeks or months.
Right. And even they showed in the series Chernobyl that even the guys in the full hazmat suits reinforced had to go in for 30 seconds to clean up, went in 30-second shifts.
Right.
Because otherwise their skin was like peeling off right away.
Right. Yeah.
So
it was bad. It
gives you an idea.
Yeah. Bad.
What's going on there?
Now, scientists from Chernobyl have distilled a vodka with ingredients found in the exclusion zone, and they are selling
it. No, that can't be real. What?
They're calling it an artisan vodka called Atomic with a K. Does the K go backwards? I like when they do that.
Are you sure they said artisan and not like arsenic?
You read that right, Ro? Check it out.
The artisan vodka is an experiment from researchers looking into how much radioactivity would transfer over to crops grown in the zone. According to the Chernobyl Spirit Company.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that a lawsuit waiting to happen?
Yeah, where's their, like, FDA?
Oh, where's ours?
Great question.
The liquor is made out of rye grain planted in the exclusion zone and water from an aquifer in Chernobyl.
From an aquifer
mm-hmm.
in Chernobyl?
Yes. After distilling it and conducting tests, University of Portsmouth environmental scientist James Smith, not related to Jordan, by the way.
No.
I just want to let you know that. That he says that it's not radioactive after they make it into vodka. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
What are they thinking?
All right. As a matter of fact, he says it's no more radioactive than any other vodka, which I had no idea could have even been radioactive.
Ew. I want to see the proof here. Can we do one of those tests where it's like, okay, well, you drink it first.
No. No. Any chemist will tell you when you distill something, impurities stay in the waste product. Okay, what are you doing there? Where's that going?
Worst idea.
First of all, the worst marketing idea of all time. And this week, you know, you're sitting there wondering, all right, did they know that the series was going to come out? Did they know what was going to happen there? Did they know that?
Maybe they think that's why it will do well. People are starting to visit, right? That's also weird.
Yeah, but they there's still places you can't go.
But there's like the Instagram famous people who are posing in the exclusion zone in bikinis and things like that, which is
good luck.
Also
good luck.
Concerning.
Nice to know you. Dust for Donya.
How do you say goodbye in Russian?
That was it.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's a good word to know.
Yeah. All right.
Let's get one for the Knurple wagon.
I don't think so. I'll be off that week. All right, let's find out. We got the news coming up with Jordan in just a few minutes here, and then we're going to find out from JK what's coming up after 7 o'clock. Stay right here. First, let's find out, Jordan, what's coming up.
We already did that.
Well. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
I mean,
sorry.
I can tell you again if you want.
I just want to get your name right for once. All right.
No worries.
We get back in two.